Hilda did not turn. "It's them," she said, "isn't it? I could tell by the way you started." Dietrich nodded dumbly, and Hilda heaved a breath. "I gag at their smell," she said. "My skin crawls at their touch." One of the sentries swung its arm in a passable imitation of a human gesture and leapt into the woods, where it paused for Dietrich and Hilda to follow. Dietrich's horse balked, so he kicked until the beast followed with notable reluctance. The sentry moved in long gliding lopes, pausing now and then to repeat the beckoning arm gesture. It wore a harness on its head, Dietrich saw, although the bit stood free before its mouth. From time to time it chittered or seemed to listen. At the edge of the clearing where the creatures had erected their strange barn, the mare tried to bolt. Dietrich called upon half-forgotten skills and fought the beast, turning it away from the sight, shielding its eyes with his broad-brimmed traveling hat. "Stay back," he told Hilda, who had lagged behind. "The horses fear these beings." Hilda jerked hard on the reins. "Then they show better sense." She and Dietrich dismounted out of sight of the strangers. After picketing the horses, they carried the food sacks to the camp, where several of the creatures awaited them. One snatched the sacks and, using an instrument of some sort, cut small pieces from the foods inside. These it placed into small glass phials. Dietrich watched the creature sniff at the mouth of one phial and hold it up to the light, and it suddenly occurred to him that it was an alchemist. Perhaps these folk had never seen goose or turnips or apples, and so were wary of eating them. The sentry touched Dietrich on the arm. It was like being brushed with dry sticks. He tried to fix the creature's uniqueness in his memory, but there was nothing that his mind could seize on. Its height, taller than many, its coloring, a darker gray, the yellow streak that showed through the gap of its shirt, the scar? But whatever idiosyncrasies there may have been were drowned in a wild impression of yellow-faceted eyes and horny lips and two long limbs. He followed the sentry to the barn. The wall had a subtle and slippery feel, unlike any material he had ever encountered, likely a mixed body combining the elements of earth and water. Inside he discovered that the barn was, in fact, an insula, like the Romans used to build, for the interior was divided into apartments, meaner in size than even a gartner's hut. These strange folk must be remarkably poor to boast such cramped quarters. The sentry led him to an apartment where three others awaited, then departed, leaving Dietrich curiously bereft. He studied his hosts. The first sat directly before him behind a table holding a number of curious objects of varied shapes and colors. A thin rectangular frame held a painting of a flowered meadow against distant trees. It was not a bas-relief, and yet it had depth. The artist had evidently solved the problem of rendering distance on a flat surface. Ah, what might Simone Martini, dead now but a handful of years, have given to study the craft? Dietrich peered closer. There was something wrong about the shape, something off about the colors. These were not quite flowers and not quite trees, and had too much blue in their green. The blooms bore six petals of intense gold, arranged in three opposed pairs. The grass was the pale yellow of straw. The scene of the homeland from which these beings had come? It must be far, he thought, to possess such strange blossoms. The iconography in the arrangement, the symbolism that informed a picture and called upon the painter's true skills, eluded Dietrich. Meaning lay in the placement of particular saints or beasts, or in the relative sizes of the figures, or in their gestures or accoutrements. But no living creatures occupied the scene, which was perhaps the strangest feature of all. It was as if the painting had been intended only as a simple reproduction of a vista. Yet why essay such bald realism when the eye could behold as much unaided? The second creature sat at a smaller table to the right side of the apartment. This wore a harness on its head and sat half-turned to face the wall. Dietrich took the harness as a mark of servitude. Like any such intent upon his duties, it took no notice of Dietrich's entrance, but its fingers danced over another painting, an array of colored squares bearing various sigils. Then the servant touched one, and the image changed. Dietrich gasped and stumbled backward, and the third creature, the one who leaned against the left-hand wall with its long arms entwined upon themselves like vines, spread its mouth wide and flapped its upper and lower lips together, making a sound like a babe learning to talk. Wah, 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 wah. Was it a greeting? This one was tall, perhaps taller than Dietrich himself, and adorned with more colorful garb than the others, a buttonless vest, such as the Moors favored, loose trousers of three-quarters length, a belt with a variety of tokens dependent upon it, a sash of bright yellow. Such finery marked a man of rank. Dietrich, having recovered his aplomb, bowed from the shoulders. Wabwabwabwa, he said, repeating the greeting as closely as he could. In response, the creature dealt Dietrich a sharp blow. Dietrich rubbed the stinging cheek. You must not strike a priest of Jesus Christ, he warned. I will call you Herr Geschett. The easy resort to blows had confirmed his surmise that this one was gently born. The first creature, dressed as plainly as the servant, but withal possessing an air of command, smacked the table with its forearm. A chittering arose, and both it and Geschert waved their arms. Dietrich could see now that the sounds were made by the horny sides of the creature's mouths clicking rapidly together like the twin blades of a scissors pair. He thought it must be speech, but despite his most intent concentration, it seemed only the noise of insects. Whatever discussion obtained between the two reached a crescendo. The seated one raised both bare forearms and rasped one against the other. There were calloused ridges along them, and the gesture made a sound like ripping cloth. Herr Geschert made a move as if to strike, and the seated one stood as if prepared to return the blow. From the other side of the apartment, the servant looked on as servants are wont to do when their betters quarrel. But the hare checked its swing and made another gesture entirely, a tossing motion that Dietrich had no difficulty interpreting as a dismissal, conceding whatever point had been in contention. The other creature tilted its head back and spread its arms, and Herr Geschert clicked its side jaws once, sharply, whereupon the other resumed its seat. Dietrich could not conjugate precisely what had just happened. There had been an argument, he thought. The first creature had challenged its lord, and had, in some fashion, triumphed. What, then, was the status of the seated one? To raise a challenge implied that the party had honor, which a commoner could not possess. So, a priest, perhaps? A powerful vassal? Or the man of another lord whom Geschert wished not to offend? Dietrich decided to call this one the Kratzer, because of the gesture it had made with its arms. Geschert leaned back against the wall, and the Kratzer resumed his seat. Then, facing Dietrich, it began clicking its horned side lips. In the midst of the insect buzz, a voice said, "Greet God." Dietrich started and looked to see whether someone else had entered the room. The voice said again, "Greet God." It issued indisputably from within a small box on the table. Through the loose weave of a cloth stretched tightly across its face, Dietrich could discern a drum head. Did the creatures have a Heinzelmannchen trapped within? He tried to look through the curtain. He had never actually seen a brownie, but the voice said, "Sit thee." The command was so unexpected that Dietrich could think of no other response but to comply. There was something like a chair nearby, and he fit himself badly into it. The seat was uncomfortable, shaped to fit a different ass than his. Now a third time the voice spoke, "Greet God." This time Dietrich merely answered, "Greet God. How goes it by you, friend Heinzelmannchen?" "It goes well." "What means this word, Heinzelmannchen?" The words were toneless and fell like the beat of a pendulum. Did the sprite make fun? The little people were wont to pranks, and while some, like the brownies, were reputedly playful, others, like the newer, could be petty and malicious. "A Heinzelmannchen is one like yourself," Dietrich said. wondering where this dialogue was going. Know you, then, others like myself?
You are the first I have met, Dietrich admitted.
Then how know you that I be a Heinzelmunken?
Oh, clever! Dietrich could see that a battle of wits was about. Had the creatures captured a brownie and required now Dietrich's offices to speak with it?
Who else, he reasoned, could fit inside a very small box, but a very small man?